This episode of the FitCast is brought to you by theptadvantage.com, an interactive website that allows trainers to create exercise programs online and communicate with clients. It is the best thing that I've found to work with online clients. If you are a trainer or you're looking to create programs, it is the place to check out, theptadvantage.com. Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 248. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and we have been pretty absent the last... I'm looking at the website right now. It looks like the last time that I posted an episode was roughly 2 months ago. Oh, nope, about a month ago. So, started to get back on the train, and I have a ton of interviews lined up, and we're just going to blow through episode 250, I think, and not do anything too special, just because I think you guys want the interviews. And one of the guys that I wanted to have back on as we get close to the certain milestone is our good friend and former regular Tony Gentilcore. And yeah, Tony, man, how you doing?
How's it going, man?
Good.
Been? I know it's been a few months since I've been on last, so it's always good to come back on.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I kind of. You know, we went through that like year or something where it was kind of like a regular thing. And and to be honest, due to our hectic schedules, we don't get to see each other as much. So this is a good excuse to catch up.
Yeah. Well, both you and I are entering our busy time of year. You were the hockey guys and us were the baseball guys. So time is a commodity, unfortunately, now.
Yeah. But like, you know, we always say it's always good to be busy and, you know, in the facility, and obviously there's a lot of other stuff going on with the holidays coming up, and one thing that people did ask about, I will talk about Japan probably next week when I get Lee and John back to talk about that stuff, but it's an interesting trip again.
Yeah, that must have been amazing. I would love to go there at some point. I just want to get off the continent at some point. I haven't been off the continent yet, so.
Yeah, that was kind of my deal. And I figured, like, if you're going to do it, go big the first time. And I went to as far away as possible.
Absolutely. Like, I'm hoping, I think at some point next year, I might be making a trip over to Europe, which would be kind of cool. So,
like the UK kind of area?
Yeah, I think so. There's some... potential speaking engagements that might be lined up, which would be kind of nice. So,
well, how'd that go? I was going to ask you how the you recently started hitting the seminar tours, and I remember like years ago talking to you when I was at CP about like, man, you gotta kind of get out there and start talking. You got a lot of stuff to talk about. So, how did that go?
Well, that was one of my goals at the beginning of the year, was to kind of feel out like what it was like to do a little bit more speaking, because it is definitely not one of my let's just say it's stepping out of my comfort zone. But it went well. Like, I did the first one I did earlier this year was with it was in Boston. It was like to a group of 30 to 40 of trainers from Boston Sports Club. You know, I went in and talked about assessment and corrective exercise, and that was like a short little, you know, 2-3 hour presentation that I did. And then in the middle of the summer, I did two back-to-back, one in Edmonton along with Dean Somerset, Rick Kaselish, and Dr. Jeff Kubos, which was the Spinal Health and Core Training Seminar, which we are releasing as a DVD in February. And that was awesome. That was like my first official big-time speaking engagement. And then I think it was like 2 weeks after that, I was in Toronto with John Goodman, and Nick Tumanello, and Dan Trink, and Jeff Gerbitz, and Mark Young. And we did a 2-day seminar in Toronto, and that was really fun. And then, of course, we did our Cresti Performance seminar about a month ago, which was – that was huge. Like, we had – you know, we had close to 200 people show up, and that was a pretty big deal. So it's going really well. I'm getting more comfortable with it. It's definitely, you know, a matter of practicing and making sure I prepare well enough. But, you know, I think it's something that I'm going to pursue a little bit more in 2013, and, you know, going to Europe would be kind of cool. So I'm looking forward to it. Did I lose you?
myself because my dog is barking and I thought I unmuted myself. But it should be interesting because the guys who perform better are starting to do a lot more stuff in Europe, and now they have a little bit of a foothold there. So hopefully there will be even more stuff down the road in terms of education over there, because you really leave the United States and there is a dramatic deficit in where training is at around the world, for the most part. I mean, it's all, not too bad up in Canada and stuff like that. But when you go into the gyms in Europe and stuff like that, it tends to be a little bit more machine based still. They're kind of like 20 years, 15 years behind. But thanks to the internet and great stuff like Perform Better, people are able to get out there and do more educational stuff. So it should be really cool.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, we've had quite a few people come visit our facility. I know you guys too, that come from the UK or New Zealand or all across the world. And, they're definitely yearning for a little bit more information. So, hopefully we'll be able to do that.
Absolutely. The other thing that we're going to quickly mention before we get started, and I said we were going to keep it relatively short, is Tony is a fan of the media. The movies and the television and stuff like that. And two things that I wanted to hit on. We will not talk about anything Lord of the Rings related.
Come on, it's 2 weeks away.
Is it really two? I didn't even know it was coming out this year.
The Hobbit comes out, I think, on the 15th. I've already got my Legolas outfit ready to go.
Are you seeing it in IMAX?
Of course. Yeah, I'm getting pumped for it. Like the next few weeks in general are going to be big for movies, because you got The Hobbit coming out. You got Quentin Tarantino's movie coming out on Christmas Day. And I'm really looking forward to Zero Dark Thirty, which is Catherine Bigelow's follow-up to The Hurt Locker. And it's about the hunt for Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
And that's getting really, really, really good reviews. But yeah, The Hobbit's the big one. So that's in like 2 weeks. So I'm getting geared up for that one.
Well, I hope you enjoy it. Like, I don't want you to not enjoy it, but I don't know, in terms of like movies and stuff like that that have been coming out, I've been very happy to not have to go to the movie theater. There hasn't been anything major that's come out really on my platter. It's just Fast 6 that's coming out in June next year. God,
you're making another one?
Dude, Fast 6 in The Rock looks great.
So is it the same old cast and they're just bringing everyone back again?
Bringing everybody back again. And also Eva Mendes is back. And but Michelle Rodriguez is back from the dead.
She died?
Supposedly.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
You got to catch up on
that. I think I stopped watching after 2 or 3, so.
Yeah, I can understand after 2, but 3 was great. 4 was, not as great as 3, but 5 was pretty much on par with 3. And it's just, it's action movies. It's a franchise that's turning into like a heist franchise more than
that. Let me ask you this. When you went to Japan, did you tour Tokyo of all the spots they filmed Tokyo Drift?
Well, yeah, actually there's one. No, well, I happened to be there, but there's like this kind of famous crossway that's in Shibuya right outside the rail station. Where in Tokyo Drift, they do this scene where there's a kind of a final chase towards the end of the movie where what's his name? Something Black. I think it's Jason Black or whatever, who's the Joshua Black, who's the main character in the movie. He's driving a car, and there's like hundreds of people crossing the street. And literally in Shibuya, you go out there at night, and it is like the place to go, kind of in Tokyo for young people. So it's always packed, and like the whole crowd separates while they're crossing the street. So there's enough room for him to do his drift to turn the corner. And yeah, I've been to Shibuya before, but I went back there this year. Uh-huh. And it's one of those places like you're gonna end up going anyways. So,
and you took a picture and everything, right?
I took pictures last year. Yeah. but that's Shibuya's great. It's one of those places that you have to hit up, but so that should be good. And obviously the new trailer hit for Star Trek today.
Oh, it did. I got to check it out.
Yeah, so I won't talk about that. I'll let you watch it. And then finally, to remind people out there to watch Fringe, Tony has finally cut up on season 4 of Fringe and is ready to go into season 5.
Yeah, we just, Lisa and I have been, we banged out season 2, 3, and 4 within like, I don't know, a month or two. So we just finished season four last week, and needless to say, the observers are.
I wouldn't spoil too much. Just
yeah, I'm. I mean, I've heard inklings of what season five, what they're doing. So, but I haven't watched any of the episodes this year because we were trying to watch all of season four. So I'll have to try to get online and find them somewhere. But yeah, we're hooked. I can't wait to find out how they end it.
Yeah, and in fitness related, Anna Torv, who is really beautiful.
Yeah, you're a fan.
Oh, I was really praying that they would actually do filming in Boston instead of Canada, so she could come. You know, I at least offered a trainer. You know, train the stars.
That'd be cool, right?
Well, yeah, it's always good to get like you know, pretty much everyone's resume right now says, "Oh yeah, I trained certain you know such and such star," and it's good for the you know, getting people in the door and stuff. So, but I just want to marry her. So,
yeah, well, it could happen. She did get divorced from that because didn't she marry one of her co-stars from the first season?
Yeah, she did. I forget his name. The guy who played John Scott, who was on a very niche, awesome show that got canceled way too soon, Keen Eddie. Like, got canceled 7 episodes into the 13-episode run. But anyways, we should talk about fitness.
Let's do it.
Okay, so we got a lot of cool questions from the audience and things to talk about, but I think one of the first things that people want to hit on, because you've been writing about it a little bit, is you're on a quest to hit a 600-pound deadlift. So I would like for you to kind of get into a couple things. Why and how are you going to do this?
Why I want to do it is because it's awesome. I hit a 3 times body weight about 2 years ago. I hit my best pull is 570, and I did it at a then body weight of 190. And I usually hover, my body weight usually hovers around 195, 200. Sometimes I'll get up to 205. I mean, I guess it just depends like how much food I ate and whatnot on any particular day. But when I hit that 570 deadlift 2 years ago, I was at 190. And, you know, it's been a goal of mine for a while now to hit a 600-pound deadlift. And, you know, speaking honestly, 2012 wasn't the greatest year of training for me. Like, I just felt like I was in a rut, just kind of going by, you know, by the seat of my pants and stuff, really no focus or goal. You know, certainly I would train, I would get my training sessions in. Like, I wasn't skipping training sessions, but it's just kind of like you know, I'll show up to the facility, kind of, oh, what am I going to do today? I'll do this. And, you know, I just got off track with a lot of stuff. So, a couple of weeks ago, I decided that, and I've written about this before, how it's always good to have someone else write your programming. I mean, you know how it is. Like, we write tons and tons and tons of programs. Mm-hmm. So the last thing I want to do on a Sunday afternoon is write my own. I'm like, you know, no, I just revert to what I like to do. And, you know, I go by that. But
well, I find it sometimes like you even forget about some of those, you know, great movements that are out there, things that, like, you know, you've done in the past, and that you just, again, you get mixed up in what's going on at the facility, and you kind of forget about those great movements.
I look at old programs I wrote for other people, and I forget about exercises that I used to like a lot.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Then I'll start using them again, you kind of regurgitating, recycle exercises. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to me, like, I mean, the hardest person to write a program for is yourself. Mm-hmm. And I've said it, the hardest person to train is yourself. Cause you know, we're creatures of habit. We like to do what we're good at. You know, we don't like to step outside our comfort zone too much. So, but anyways, like 2012 was just kind of like a really humdrum year for training for me. And, so, you know, I think a week or two ago, I reached out to Greg Robbins, who's our new coach at Cresty Performance, and asked him if he'd be willing to write me 3 months of programming with the sole purpose of hitting that 600-pound deadlift. And I asked Greg because he's in a similar track as me. I mean, he competes in powerlifting, and our deadlifts are pretty comparable, and he's kind of shooting for the same goal. So I figured he would be a great person to outsource my training to. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I'm at his disposal for the next few months. And, you know, a lot of stuff that we're going to concentrate on, is doing at least starting off with lower percentage lifts, you know, and focusing on bar speed and whatnot. So, you know, like, for example, the other day I did bench press, and the goal was to use like 67.5% of my one rep max for whatever reps I was doing. And, you know, honestly, it was pretty easy. I mean, because I have a horrible bench press, and I've always been a bad bencher. So 67% of my one rep max isn't that much weight. But with a deadlift, you know, we want to be a little bit more conservative with it because it is a heavier pull for me. So we want to focus on lower percentage work just to focus on technique and bar speed and work up from there. And another thing that I'm doing differently with him is that I'm only pulling once a week, whereas before I was always pulling twice a week, sometimes three.
Sometimes four. Didn't you go like a couple weeks where you deadlifted 4 days a week?
Yeah. I mean, Eric and I did a crazy routine right before I pulled 570 where we were pulling four times a week. It was kind of like a Smolnov type deadlifting protocol. Mm-hmm. And that was just pure hell. And but no, there's certainly times, you know, all the time where I'm deadlift. I'll do a speed day and then do a rep day. And then later on the week, I'll do a max effort day. And I just think it's too much. So with Greg, I think what we're going to do is 1 week's going to be, okay, you know, speed work versus bands. The next week, it's going to be a rep day. The following week, we'll work up to a heavy double or a heavy triple, maybe a heavy single. And then after that, do the accessory work. So, you know, I'm very excited because, you know, it's a new feeling for me to kind of have someone else do my programming. I don't have to really think about it. And, you know, I'm pretty confident that come February-ish, that, you know, we'll shoot for that 600-pound deadlift and I'll finally get it. You know, I've been talking about it for 2 years. I think people are getting sick of me talking about it. So, but yeah, that's kind of the game plan moving forward. So I'm pretty excited for it.
Well, you know, a couple of things. Don't make it as mythical as my 300-pound bench, which I'll never get. I don't think I'll ever bench 300.
I thought you got it.
No, I maxed out in life at 280.
And that was a slow 280.
That was like a 12-second concentric lift.
I have the video still. That video is just everyone's reaction in the background when you actually hit it. It was just like literally a 15-second like grinder. You got it. So
yeah, you know, that's all that matters. And, you know, after I tore my pec, like I've always had, you know. It's always weird because I've never been able to devote the time to continue to improve the tissue quality of my pecs. And I've always run into a situation where, you know, I can dumbbell bench through the roof. And mm-hmm. I'm just happy, you know, sticking with my dumbbell bench. And with the barbell, you know, I'll bench for like 2 or 3 weeks. Then I'll start feeling in that third or fourth week, I start getting that same feeling at the bottom of the lift where I just feel like I have to start having that same feeling right before I tore my pec. So it's just something I never want to ever experience again. And God bless guys like Dave Tate who can, you know, just tear their pecs and, you know, say, all right,
400 pounds. And
yeah. And then they'll just say, all right, well, I'll back off a little bit in a couple months. I'll start going back and hitting PRs again. But I unfortunately will probably not attain that. So for me, it's been all about, you know, continuing to, in terms, like you said, for goal setting, like you were kind of didn't have a single goal for a while. Mine has just been to make sure that really nothing hurts and stay as balanced as
possible. Which is a good goal. I mean, we get plenty of people that come into our facility, and I know you guys get it at Boyle's, where, like, you know, get them healthy, mm-hmm. and that's the goal, and then we can work from there. So,
well, it's different because I'm just not in the environment where it's like when I was at CP, like I was always about getting stronger, stronger, stronger because I was in that environment. Like you want to get, you know, mm-hmm. stronger, you know. But now with you know, working at Boyle's, like everyone has a different goal in terms of like the staff and stuff like that. Guys still lift really heavy, don't get me wrong, but I think with my own goals, I just find like I start getting to a certain point where my lifts start going up, then my body starts falling apart, and it's just I don't have the dedication to keep up with my mobility and my soft tissue work. And I'm not going to go to John Paloff, you know, every week to make sure I can continue to do this stuff. It's not personally worth it for me. I just want to be able to move and not have my back ever hurt or my shoulders hurt, which they don't. So
yeah, and that's great.
I just think that's important for people to keep in a perspective when they listen to like the podcast, or they like read a new T-Nation article on how to add 100 pounds to your bench press. Make sure that you have your own goals understood and keep those in the back of your mind. And that's the problem I think a lot of people, I mean, you see it all the time, Tony, where people just program hop. That's what happened to me. I used to program hop back in college and stuff, just because it was a new article. And, you know, everyone always writes the first comment, this is exactly what I was looking for.
I mean, everyone does that. I mean, I wrote my last T-Nation article, the squat 4 times per week article that I wrote. I can guarantee that people read it that day, like, oh, I'm going to do that. You know, I'm going to squat 4 times a week. And the way I wrote it was like, I felt it was a more long-term approach to be, you know, if we are going to increase our squatting frequency, the way I wrote it was like, my goal with it was to see, not to just make it a month-long program, but make it like a template where, you know, you could kind of draw it out for a longer period of time, like 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. But I guarantee like people read that, did it for a week or two, then the next article came out that whoever else wrote, and then they programmed hop to that one. And it's just the nature of the beast at times, unfortunately.
It's the way it is.
We all do it.
Yeah, I know. So the another topic that people wanted us to hit on is coaching and teaching the hip hinge. And I know that's obviously one of the main things that you have to work with a new athlete, in terms of teaching proper movement patterns and getting them to, you know, eventually deadlift correctly. So what are some of the things that you guys, do to help coach that up and make sure that things are where they need to be before they start lifting heavy weights?
I think teaching the hip hinge is very, very important. And I think one of the simplest ways to do it is that whole, you know, at least from a beginning standpoint, is the PVC stick trick. Placing that long stick on the backside of their body, so they have 3 points of contact between on their head, between the shoulder blades, and at their sacrum. And like the stick tells them if they're keeping a proper back position, then you're just going to teach them to push those hips back. Another one that I like is one Dan John uses with, and I don't even know what he calls it. I think maybe you might know, Kevin, is where he places the kettlebell against his sternum. And he kind of pushes it into the sternum, and then they hip hinge back that way. Do you know what he calls that?
I know what you mean. It's kind of like a waiter's bell kind of thing.
Yeah. But it works. I mean, only because like if they don't do it right, they're going to fall forward and tip. So that, I mean, I don't even know like what to call it, but I use that with an elderly lady come in. One of our clients has her mom coming in from California, and she's like, oh, can you do an assessment? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And her mom's like in her 80s. And, she came in, and, you know, I just want to teach her a proper hip hinge. And I basically took a 12-pound kettlebell, had her put it up against her chest, and teach her, okay, you're going to push your hips back using the kettlebell. And it works miraculously, because if they don't do it right, they're going to fall forward. Mm-hmm. So, she did it within a set. It was awesome. That's a really, really valuable tool that I've used. And then I also just use a lot of verbal cueing. Like if I'm coaching the deadlift, I'll tell people, you know, I'll put them in the proper position as far as their foot. Cause I think a lot of people kind of set up too wide with their deadlift. Mm-hmm. I'll set their feet and whatnot. But I'll tell them, like, listen, here's what we're going to do. A lot of people, and especially with a trap bar, they kind of try to squat it too much, which, you know, that's another ballgame altogether, because, I mean, even with a trap bar, there is going to be a little bit of quad involvement. But I'll tell them to, you know, try to knock the wall over with their butt. I mean, any verbal cue that works is what I'll use. Like, there might be I'll have, like, 3 or 4 of them in my back pocket. And try to see which one sticks and works with them. Cause sometimes it's just a matter of, oh, it clicks with that person, but what clicks with that person might not click with the other. Another one I've used is, you know, pretend I'm putting a rope around your waist, I'm standing behind you, and I'm pulling your hips back. You know, that tends to work a little bit. It's hard a little bit to describe these without any like visual, feedback as far as video and stuff, but hopefully those make sense.
one of the things that people need to always keep in mind is you can never neglect something as important as getting a proper hip hinge, because it is the basis for a lot of things that you're going to do in the gym. And as you get stronger, that's the first thing that's going to really start, you know, biting you in the ass. If you can't keep that proper hip hinge, you're going to run into, God, just a whole array of issues, from low back pain to knee issues, hip issues, things like that.
And one important thing too is, like, if you're a trainer or a coach, taking the time to simply teach somebody how to hip hinge, I mean, just be very coaching intense in the beginning, and taking the time to do it is going to make, when eventually down the road when you start introducing new exercises, it's going to make it so much easier to coach those exercises. You know, just taking the time to actually teach your clients the proper hip hinge. So when you do go, okay, we're going to teach a box squat, we're going to do a sumo deadlift, okay, now we're going to work on a one-legged RDL. You know, if they have the base of knowing how to do the hip hinge properly, it's going to make coaching those exercises all the more easier.
Well, let's kind of hit on something that's in the same ballpark, which is, you know, hip stability. And again, that's one of those things that sometimes, you know, I'm always worried about getting into minutiae about stuff, but, you know, simple basic hip stability is something that, again, we try to hit on with, obviously, like your X-band walks, your
sure.
single leg hip lifts, or cook hip lifts, whatever you want to call it. So obviously you guys program a lot of stuff in terms of the warm up and into the actual lift. So how do you guys address that?
Well, I think with hip stability, one thing that we have to take into consideration is, you know, we look at the hips, like the glute med or the glute max, and we automatically assume, okay, oh, you know, they abduct the hip, they extend the hip, they externally rotate the hip. But one thing we also fail to realize is that they also resist internal rotation and pronation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like a lot of times we'll get people come in that have, you know, flat feet, or they've been told to wear orthotics all the time, it's because they pronate. But a lot of times, if you get them into proper, you know, help them get to get proper hip stability and strengthen the glutes, you know, they're going to supinate more, they're going to externally rotate more, because that glute medius and that glute max control that femoral head. So, you know, if they don't have that, I mean, of course they're going to internally rotate, they're going to pronate. So, as far as hip stability drills, I like to keep it simple. Like, I think the sideline clam is a great starting point. Most people butcher that exercise. You walk into any commercial gym, you'll see any number of people laying on their side doing their sideline clams, but at the same time they're doing it, but they're using the lower back. You know, they're using way more range of motion than they need. Mm-hmm. So just teaching somebody to do a proper sideline clam to fire that glute medius is going to pay huge dividends. And of course, sure, X-band walks are going to come into the picture. But two, like ones that I like are, you know, where we're standing on one foot and we're using that other leg to drive hip stability. So if I'm standing on my left leg, you know, I'll have them keep a soft knee in that left leg, and I'll have them, you know, shoot their right leg forward, shoot it to their side, and then rotate a little bit. So they are going to get that little bit of triplanar hip stability. And that's actually, I forget what article I wrote on T Nation where I put videos of it in there, where you're working sagittal, frontal, and transverse plane. Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense the way I verbally cued it. But, you know, that's going to be one that I feel has a lot of carryover. But, you know, just I mean, coaching your exercises properly, like doing more supine bridges or barbell hip thrusts or one-legged hip thrusts. I mean, that's going to get the glutes to fire. It's going to hit the glute med, and it's going to control that femoral head, which will then prevent a lot of that, you know, pronation and internal rotation you see. So I don't think you have to get too fancy with this stuff. I mean, as long as we, you know, hit the basics and people master those and nail those, I think they're setting themselves up for success.
Well, in terms of, you know, hip alignment issues, because that's something I've battled with a lot, and I see it with a lot of, to be honest, you see it, I almost see it in every athlete that walks through the door, and even more so with the personal training client that's a little bit older and is sitting down a lot. And I know you guys have been actually, you know, we can definitely talk about the PRI stuff too, because I know you guys have been getting into that quite a bit. But the, you know, the issue of people having you know, their pelvis aligned incorrectly, you know, people sitting on one side more than the other side, mm-hmm. You know, leg length issues. Do you guys like address that directly, or, you know, do you just kind of like, do you do anything directly to correct that in the programming or the warm-up, stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, we are getting, into the PRI, which is the Postural Restoration Institute. We're looking into that a lot more. And their philosophy is basically it's a big philosophy, but I mean, and I'm definitely watering it down, but there's really no such thing as symmetry. Like no one is like, symmetry is like a made up thing. You know, just the way we're designed as human beings, we're asymmetrical. You know, we have, you know, a liver on one side, you know, we have a vena cava on the other, you know, we have more prominent attachments on one side with the diaphragm as opposed to the other. So, you know, if we look at our hips, like people tend to sit into the right hip a lot. So if you watch like a pitcher on the mound or an outfielder or just people standing in general, if you go to your local mall and just see people standing in line, you more often than not see them sitting back into their right hip. So that means they're going to be a little bit more adducted and internally rotated on the right hip, you know, which also is going to mean they're going to be a little bit more posteriorly tilted on that side, you know, and then on that right side, they're going to be more abducted or abducted and externally rotated. So a lot of the PRI stuff is going to be simple drills and breathing patterns and whatnot that we can do before we exercise to kind of encourage us to get more back into a neutral position, and then we can go and do our strength training. They have eons of exercises. Like we did an in-service last week when Michael Mullen came in, one of their PRI guys came in and did like a 2-hour staff in-service, and it was phenomenal. But out of all the drills that they do, like we've incorporated maybe 6, 8, 10 of them. You know, we definitely are looking more into breathing patterns and taking care of that left rib flare that we see in a lot of people. And, this is stuff that I've written about a few times. I know Eric's written about, so people interested in that stuff, they can check out recent blog posts that we've written on them. But, the breathing pattern stuff is pretty profound stuff. Like we don't take it to the nth degree. So it's not like we're working on breathing patterns for a half hour and then we go train. Like I'm only talking like 5-10 minutes tops, like where, and that's including, you know, the entire warm up. You know, we're throwing in a little breathing stuff, putting in some PRI hip stuff, and then doing our normal warm up, and then we're gonna go train. So it's not like we're spending, you know, a half hour doing all these cute little breathing drills, and not getting our guys any training effect. That's not the case. But certainly, you know, we've recognized that this is an important component and something that we're looking at. And I know other guys like Bill Hartman and Mike Robertson, a lot of guys, you know, and Kevin Neal and Dean Somerset. I mean, those guys are all looking into this stuff too. And I really think it's going to be the next chapter as far as programming and taking the context of just, you know, trying to fix stuff in general.
All right, let's move on to the next topic. We had a lot of people ask about training tips for people who lift on their own. And I think that's, again, a lot of people are probably listening to this podcast, don't train at a facility with, a bunch of people. They're not lucky enough to have a staff or even a really good facility. So they end up having to go to the Boston Sports Club or the, big box gym to get in a lift. I know you, on some days during the week, go to the, the local Boston Sports Club to get into a lift. And I myself in the past had to go through stuff like that. So, do you have any tips for people who are lifting by themselves, you know, to stay motivated, to make sure that they're lifting hard and getting in a good training session?
You're right. Like you and I live in this bubble where we get to work out in these, great training environments. So when I do go to a commercial gym, sometimes it's a good change of pace. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. It's just, sometimes I need a different environment. I don't know if you ever feel the same way where like you're training around the same people in the same gym. It's like sometimes a change of environment's good. But as far as like, I mean, I don't know, like I'm not a psychologist. Like I can't, I mean, I just tell people, I mean, motivate yourself. Like you need, you, go train, just get it done. I mean, I don't know what I can say to help motivate people that train on their own, other than I think it's important to what we hit on before, where you need to have some kind of goal to train for. Like it doesn't help you at all to just go to the gym and just kind of putter around and kind of just toss some weights, do this, do that. Like you need to have some kind of goal, and that's going to make a huge, huge, huge difference. Like just knowing that you have a purpose that of why you're going to the gym. Like today I'm doing, you know, I'm going for a heavy triple of deadlifts. Like that's your goal for that day. And then you do your accessory work. Like you need some kind of overall goal. Okay. Whether it's to, you know, add 10 pounds or lose 5 pounds of fat or, you know, hit X number on your bench press. Like you need some kind of goal. And that is just going to point you in the right direction. So I think if anything I can tell people is just have a goal, have a purpose, and then go get after it.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you can ever, you know, if you are with like any of those online communities, whether it be like Fitocracy or even like a forum or stuff like that, to have some kind of external competition, even if it's not in person, is always, you know, something that you can do.
That's a very good point too. Yeah. I use weighttraining.com. I think, I mean, I log my workouts there and it does hold me accountable because I know there's people that like to see what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I feel guilty if I don't like, you know, say, oh, here's what I did today. You know, so that's a great way to hold yourself accountable. And I know you being a video game guy, like they both Fitocracy and weighttraining.com do a very good job of like, you know, giving you high fives and rewarding you for logging X amount of workouts. And like, so there is a little bit of an incentive, you know, if you like to compete against yourself, those are two websites that can help you do that.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like I registered on Fitocracy, but I have not really used it because I don't need a computer to tell me that I'm awesome.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I'm awesome.
Yeah, you know, you already know that.
I've confirmation of that, you know, being able to make sure that I am getting in my list. But, you know, also for the love of God, the best $50 or $100 that you can spend is get like a cheap iPod or something like that where you can get some good music because, you know, I, nothing against some of the staff that I work with at MBSC, but, too many times during the day. And it's the hockey players too, to be honest, country music goes on, the stereo.
I can't like Wednesdays or country Western Wednesdays.
What the?
And it's absolute torture for me.
It's the worst. I mean, I would honestly, like, as much as I gave you crap for it, I'd rather have Tony's Techno Thursdays.
Yeah.
and listen to some really creepy techno music than, it's the problem with country music is it's always about beer, like fried chicken and like,
pickup trucks
and cowboys.
Yeah, our baseball. We have a lot of guys from the South that come up and train with us. So we have guys from Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, you know, and they're all about country Western Wednesdays. And I'm just like, I would rather throw my face on an axe and like, oh, it's just pure torture for me. But at the same time, I'm not the one training; they are. So exactly. If that's what motivates them, then so be it. So.
I can always relate because I like to listen. I'm really weird where the only time I listen to rap really is when I lift, and I listen to like some hardcore shit. I like some DMX. And when you know, I talk about country music being very similar. I mean, obviously rap is talking about bitches and hoes, and then when you go into the you know, pop music, it's always kind of like a similar tone and set. So I can feel where they're coming from.
Yeah. And, I mean, but it's gotten better. Like, you know, there's, you know, Eric used to he used to have control over the music all the time. And we, like his iPod, like people just got sick of it. So we
finally, you mean like the My Mother Never Loved Me music,
oh my
which
God,
again, like, is kind of the same, like
fine,
the Rise Against.
It's the same 50 songs played every day.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you how many times I've heard Linkin Park. Like it drives me bonkers. So now it's gotten to the point where it's like, okay, different days have different themes and, you know, I can throw in some trance and doesn't get shut off after 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll play Tribe Called Quest, my old 90s hip hop when I train. You know, like Chris likes to put in Katy Perry, which whatever.
Good on him. No, that dude, Katy Perry get you a little fired up, a little.
I mean, we're getting it's definitely diverse, but you're right. I mean, certainly people getting an iPod. I mean, you're at the mercy of whatever the gym's playing when you go to a commercial gym. So getting an iPod absolutely is a great piece of advice.
All right, cool. Before we wrap things up, the last thing that we got inquiries on, you know, again, it's something people like to ask a lot of guests and always get new ideas and stuff on. But in terms of like nutrition, have you been doing anything interesting nutritionally? Are you pretty much?
Not necessarily. Like I'm pretty set in my ways as far as like how I eat, but I have been dabbling a little bit in intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. I do like it. Like I'm not a Nazi about it. Like I'm not going to hyperventilate if I eat an hour before I'm supposed to. Mm. Like if I'm hungry, I'm going to eat. But during the week, I have been holding off, and my first meals are generally around noon. So, like, after I get off here, like, I'll drive to the facility, I'll do my workout. I won't have my first meal of the day until about 12:30, and then I'm basically eating. I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm eating 3 to 4 big meals every day rather than 6 or 7 smaller ones. Mm-hmm. And I like it a lot. Like it's fitting my schedule very well. Like I do a lot of my writing in the morning, and I found that in the past when I used to have this big ginormous breakfast first thing in the morning, I would go to do my writing and I would just feel a little like groggy and like not with it. But holding off and saving it all to later in the day, like I get my writing done in the morning, I have my tea, I get a little caffeine kick, and I feel a lot more mentally clear, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
But like I said, like I'm not super strict with it. Like on the weekends, like Lisa and I might go to brunch in the morning. But you know, and like I said, if I'm there's some mornings where I am legitimately hungry and I'm like, F it, I'm gonna have breakfast. Like I'm not gonna be like hold off for 3 hours just because I'm internet forum said I had to. But I have been dabbling with it for, I'm going on probably 3 months now. I've been doing it, and I do like it. Like it fits my lifestyle pretty well. And I mean, I'm getting the same number of calories. It's just in a more condensed meal frequency. So, so far it's been working pretty well.
So your metabolism fire has not,
No, I'm just, out. Yeah, that's no, it's good.
Okay. Just checking.
It's still up there. So I always laugh at that too when people say, "Well, if you don't eat in 2 hours, your metabolism is going to go down." I was like, "Well, then what the hell did our ancestors do? Like, you know, we would have died off a long time ago if that were the case."
Oh yeah, I think again, it's like one of those things where you know, it's interesting that we thought we were so right 5 years ago. We were talking about, you know, being so obsessed about the thermic effect of food and making sure that we're eating every 2 to 3 hours to keep that fire stoked. And then
well, for some people that works very well. I mean, it's about finding what works for you. I mean, there's certainly some clients where, you know, eating several smaller meals a day works well for them, mm-hmm. But I think overall for most people, it just comes down to the quality of food they're eating and making proper food choices. You know, exactly. I think that's paramount over everything to me. You know, just making sure they're making good food choices, and the calories kind of take care of themselves. Like I try not to overthink things. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there might be some people like who might disagree with me with that, and that's fine. But, I mean, for some people the frequency, 6-7 meals a day works. For others it's 2 or 3 or 4. I mean, you do have to experiment a little bit, but you know, that's just a matter of, you know, people finding out what works for them.
Cool. Well, I think the last thing that we're going to hit on is what you got going on over at the TonyGentleCore.com. I see you got a fresh new website. I don't know if you had that website before we talked last, but it's pretty fresh.
No, it's good. Like I'm very happy with it. Like I had it made, 2 years ago, and then I had it updated a year ago. And, you know, I'm looking into adding some new stuff now. Like I definitely got to get my butt cracking on a newsletter. Eric's been on for me about 5 years for having
Jesus Christ, dude.
And it's funny because last year when I got everything updated, I had it like put in where I had the service for doing a newsletter, and I've been collecting emails. I just have not done a newsletter yet. Mm. So that's one of my goals for another goal for 2013 is to get that going. You know, and then it's going to be an awesome year. Like I'm looking forward to it. So it's things are going well. I don't really have any room to complain.
Very cool. Well, I think that's where we will wrap things up. But no, Tony, it was good to talk to you.
That was great. Good catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will surely talk down the road. And
go see The Hobbit.
No, don't go see The Hobbit. Go watch Fast Five instead.